Okay, folks, so we're it's 5 to 2, and reconvening our meeting, which we have item 19 and 20 to cover, and we will finish those items at 4 o'clock. That's our target, and then we have a small closed session discussion. So before moving into item 19 and 20, I would like to read the following statement. Is before we begin item 19 and 20, I would like to clarify the scope of these two items. Both items involve the results of monitoring and reporting requirements contained in the ag waiver. These items have only been noticed as informational items summarizing what staff has learned through the process and how they are using the data moving forward under this current ag waiver. Therefore, it is not appropriate at this time to discuss the next ag order. These items have not been noticed for such a discussion, and we are focusing solely on the results of these items. And we will have many discussions in the future on the ag order, but not today because it is not the proper forum for this conversation. Therefore, if any discussion veers off in the ag order discussion, our council may ask respectfully our speakers to limit their comments solely as it was noticed in the agenda. So I appreciate in advance your cooperation, and our board will actually follow exactly the same recommendations from the council. So, Ms. McKenna, if you can introduce item 19.
Yes, thank you. Item 19 is an informational item on the status of our irrigated lands, rate of return program, groundwater monitoring and reporting results. It will be presented by Angela Schroeder. She's the Irrigated Lands Program Manager for Groundwater Activities.
Thank you, Lisa, Chairman Wolf, and members of the board. Again, my name is Angela Schroeder. I handle the groundwater activities of the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Programs. And I am really happy to be here today, actually, because it's been 4 years, almost to the day, that we began implementing the agricultural work. And agenda item 19 is to provide a summary of what we've learned so far with respect to groundwater monitoring and reporting. Before we begin, just sort of a little history reminder here. So in March of 2012, the Central Coast Water Board adopted and began implementation of groundwater monitoring reporting requirements for irrigated ag for the first time in California. And this was in response to the many previous studies documenting severe nitrate pollution in the Central Coast region resulting from agricultural discharges and also the associated risk to public health. In addition, at that time, the board also recognized that individuals on domestic wells and small disadvantaged communities were especially at risk because those domestic drinking water wells were not monitored and we had very little data for shallow groundwater wells. In addition, small communities don't have the capacity or resources to effectively implement drinking water treatment, as we heard from Eugene Leung earlier today. Also recall, though, that the board also recognized that the groundwater monitoring was a brand new requirement for irrigated agriculture and did not want to require, at that time, new groundwater monitoring wells or extensive sampling. So the intent was for dischargers to sample existing wells as an initial starting point. So over the last 4 years, we've learned a lot. A few take-home messages that I wanted just to put out here at the very beginning of the presentation. The first is that we are successfully implementing groundwater monitoring for irrigated agriculture. We have over 4,000 groundwater wells currently in our system. There's a high level of compliance among growers. The data is important, and results continue to show severe nitrate impacts to groundwater, including drinking water wells. Board Member Delgado asked an interesting question when we were talking about the EJ item, and that was, how do we find out where they are? This data is one of the first ways we've been able to start answering that question about where do we have impacts to drinking water. It's also critical to reduce nitrate loading now. Chris will talk a little more about that in the next item. And finally, staff use data to prioritize and follow up and to inform changes to continually adapt the area land notified program to improve our implementation. So I'll talk about an overview of the groundwater monitoring requirements, both individual and cooperative, where we are in terms of the status of implementation and compliance, give you a summary of the groundwater results, and then describe how we follow up and how staff uses the data. So as adopted in the agricultural order and the associated monitoring reporting programs, the primary objectives of the groundwater monitoring reporting requirements at this initial stage are fourfold. And it's to characterize groundwater quality in agricultural areas, to identify and prioritize areas and farms that are at an increased risk for nitrate loading and drinking water pollution, to identify priority areas where we need to do better nutrient management, and also importantly to inform domestic drinking water well users who may be affected by unsafe drinking water quality. So since March of 2012, as I mentioned, we have over 4,000 groundwater wells in the system, all electronically uploaded to GeoTracker by certified laboratories. The data includes approximately 6,800 nitrate results and over 95,000 results for all parameters. This is a very significant accomplishment, given that in 2012 we had no data. Of these nearly 4,000 wells, 1,773 are drinking water wells, and nearly 2,300 are irrigation wells. We have both individual requirements and cooperative requirements. The executive officer approved two cooperative groundwater monitoring programs, the Central Coast Groundwater Coalition, which operates region-wide, and the Santa Rosa Creek Valley Cooperative Groundwater Monitoring Program, which operates in a small groundwater basin north of Cambria. So from this point on, I'm going to be talking mostly about the Central Coast Groundwater Coalition as a cooperative. The Central Coast Groundwater Coalition requirements are documented in a work plan that was approved by the executive officer. And the main difference between the individual and the Central Coast Groundwater Coalition are that the Central Coast Groundwater Coalition is only required to sample domestic drinking water wells. They can characterize with irrigation wells, but are not required to conduct that sampling. And in general, the coalition samples at a lesser frequency. So the individual sample twice a year, in the fall and the spring of the first year, while the Central Coast Groundwater Coalition only samples one time, with the exception of a subset of wells that are within 80% of the maximum contaminant level. And those are required to be repeat sampling annually. So in terms of compliance, in 2014, Water Board staff conducted an initial compliance evaluation, and that compliance evaluation results were that 74% of the domestic drinking water wells that were reported by the growers to the Water Board in the electronic notice of intent were sampled at least one time. 75% of the irrigation wells were sampled. As a result of that compliance evaluation, Water Board staff issued 380 notices of violation. And since then, we've had an increase in compliance. So in 2015, Water Board staff conducted a similar analysis and found that approximately 91% of the drinking water wells were sampled and 76% of the primary irrigation wells were sampled. As of right now, approximately 128 farms are still non-compliant with the groundwater monitoring requirements, and staff is working to evaluate progressive enforcement steps we might take. In terms of the Central Coast Groundwater Coalition, we rely primarily on the coalition to verify their member compliance, and then we evaluate the results as part of the data they submit and in their characterization reports. So in 2014, during our review of the draft characterization reports, staff determined that the Central Coast Groundwater Coalition did not sample all domestic drinking water wells on Central Coast Groundwater Coalition member properties. As a result, the Water Board required the coalition to sample an additional 116 drinking water wells. In 2016, staff approved the final groundwater characterization reports and also determined that the Central Coast groundwater coalition had fully completed the groundwater monitoring reporting per the approved work plan. So in terms of reporting, as I mentioned, we have over 4,000 groundwater wells in the system. All that data is uploaded electronically to GeoTracker by certified laboratories. It is all publicly available for display and analysis and download using GeoTracker. The Central Coast Groundwater Coalition wells were actually posted to GeoTracker on March 15th, which I think was Tuesday. We also have the Central Coast Groundwater Coalition groundwater characterization reports for northern and southern counties, which are also available on the Water Board's website. And this is a picture on top here of what is displayed in GeoTracker. And I just want to really emphasize that the fact that we have this large amount of data being uploaded directly by the laboratories really creates some significant efficiency for Water Board staff. In addition, because it's publicly available for download on GeoTracker, it also allows the public to get that data quickly, as well as the researchers and other agencies, and we don't have to deal with follow-up related to any requests for information. So it's quite meaningful that we have that data in GeoTracker. So in terms of results, this is a map of the region with groundwater nitrate concentration. The green dots are wells with less than half of the MCL, which is 10 milligrams per liter of nitrate as nitrogen. The yellow are wells with half of the MCL up to the MCL, so up to 10 milligrams per liter of nitrate of nitrogen. And the red dots and dark red dots are wells that exceed the drinking water standard. So the results support findings from previous studies that there still is significant nitrate pollution of groundwater in agricultural areas. As you can see in this pie chart, for all groundwater wells sampled region-wide, 26% of the wells exceed drinking water standard for nitrate. The range of the concentrations are shown in the table below there. Of the 1,733 domestic drinking water wells, 440 wells exceeded the drinking water standard. That's 25%. And the mean concentration was 10.3 milligrams per liter. The max concentration is 188. Irrigation wells has a similar percentage of exceedances, 26%. And the maximum concentration was 870 milligrams per liter nitrate of nitrogen. Attachment 2 to the staff report includes similar maps for each county in the Central Coast region. While I'm on the slide, I just wanted to tell a quick story about this 188 here, this maximum concentration for drinking water wells. This, and I'm sorry that Vicente left because I wanted to share this with him. This well here, the 188 max, is actually a well in the Los Lomas area. So you'll remember that we visited that area in February 2015 on our first environmental justice tour. And actually the grower who sampled this well and had the 188 milligram per liter result actually was one of the speakers at our tour on March 7th of this year. And then he spoke in Castroville. And what I think is really important about what this grower said was that this concentration, 188 milligrams per liter, was found in his well more than 10 times the drinking water standard, actually almost 20 times the drinking water standard. He was not aware that this was his drinking water quality until we required him, as a grower, to sample his well. So I think that that's a really important thing to remember. The other aspect about this is that he was also a Spanish-speaking grower and required a lot of assistance to achieve compliance. And so our staff was able to help him figure out what the ag order is about and how to achieve compliance. In addition, our grants coordinator, Katie McNeil, helped him get safe drinking water for his family. But I feel like he's a really great example of where it's working on all accounts. And it's someone that you heard from at our region tour. So this is a table of results, groundwater nitrate concentration statistics by well type and county. And this data is also summarized in more detail in the tables in attachment 1 to the staff report. The first column, this first table talks about all groundwater wells. The first column is the percent above the maximum contaminant level. The third, the second is the maximum concentration. And the last column there is the mean concentration for all these various counties. The numbers in bold, red bold, indicate where we have MCL exceedances. So for all groundwater wells, our highest percentage of exceedances are for Monterey County, Santa Barbara County, and Santa Clara County. I should note, though, that if you look at your tables in the attachment one, Santa Clara County only has about a couple hundred wells. So it's a large percentage, but a much smaller population of data. For drinking water wells, similarly, Monterey County, Santa Barbara County, and Santa Clara County are the highest. Monterey County, we have 40% of the drinking water well that were sampled exceeded the MCL. Also, in the Central Coast Groundwater Coalition members, groundwater characterization report for northern counties, the coalition reported that 50% of their members' drinking water wells that were sampled exceeded the drinking water standard. And then this is part of the results for irrigation wells. Similarly, we have Monterey County, Santa Barbara County, and Santa Clara County with high percentages of MCL. So finally, I want to talk a little bit about how does the Water Board staff use the irrigated land regulatory program data. And before I do that, I just want to quickly recognize the staff who are in this room, because there's not very many of us, but we're doing a lot with the data. So I have Corey in the back row there, who works on looking at GeoTracker, making sure all the growers get data in. Daya Kugel, who's helping with replacement water. Hector Hernandez, who works with our coalition. And then, of course, Monica and Arwen, who have helped us out with the nitrate loading. We do a lot with this data. It's easy for us to use it because it's all in GeoTracker. We characterize the groundwater quality in ag areas. We identify and prioritize areas for follow-up, including farms that have a high risk for nitrate loading and drinking water pollution. When we find the exceedances, we require drinking water notification letters to be sent out and postings to inform well users about unsafe drinking water and related health risks. So these are some of the examples of the postings that were required as a result of our order. Collectively, with the coalition and the Water Board together, we've sent out about 500 drinking water notification letters. In addition, we follow up on replacement water needs for affected communities, small water systems, especially disadvantaged communities. We work closely with the Environmental Justice Coalition for Water, other representatives to do that. This picture here on the left is a picture of San Lucas Elementary School receiving their bottled water. And I also wanted to point out an even newer case that we're working on in Monterey County right now. And this is where a small business is not able to have water at their drinking water fountain or in their coffee or in their faucets. So the businesses are being affected in that area. So these are the types of cases that we would look into. We coordinate very closely and share data with the Division of Drinking Water. It's happy that they could be here today. And we're also coordinating very closely with county environmental health offices to share data with them. Well, Gigiwa from Santa Barbara County is joining us today. Finally, we're also making data easily available to other agencies, researchers, and the public so that we can all work towards solutions. So next steps, staff will continue to implement these existing groundwater monitoring requirement requirements. We'll continue to notify well owners about unsafe drinking water. We'll continue to follow up on non-compliance and drinking water priorities. We'll coordinate with the Division of Drinking Water and counties, and as Chair Wolf has requested, we'll be coordinating also in the southern, PCR footage in the southern part of our region. We're also always looking at the data to identify areas of improvement for groundwater monitoring. We will continue to adapt the program. Finally, staff will continue to work with growers and those regulated by the agricultural order to reduce nitrate loading. And on that, just a reminder about the take-home messages that we are successfully implementing groundwater monitoring reporting for irrigated agriculture. We have a high level of compliance. Data is important. And the results continue to show severe nitrate effects to groundwater. especially drinking water bottles. So it's critical to reduce nitrate loading out. Finally, staff use the data to prioritize and follow up and to inform changes, and we'll continually work to adapt the area land regulatory program so that we can improve the implementation. Let me take any questions.
Thank you, Angela, for the report. It looks like the mean values are pretty good. And they're all close to the standard.
Well, that's all relative.
It would be helpful to see the standard deviation, to see how that data is spread out.
So if you look in on attachment one of your staff report on page one, there is a box of whiskers plot there, the bar plot.
Right.
And it's pretty technical, so I didn't choose to show it here today. But it does show, so that mean is where that blue dot is.
Can you project that? Because I did look at that, and I do have some questions. I take it the circles above the vertical boxes are all kind of outliers on the high end.
So yeah, so the graph that you have in front of you is a box and whiskers plot, and the little circles are the spread of the data.
John, I think there's a switch where you have to change what is feeding in the monitor. Because it's, the laptop is doing it now, but you got to put a switch somewhere to let the Elmo projector do it.
So you have it in front of you, but you can see it here too. So this is a box and whiskers plot, and let's look at Monterey County. That first green box is the agricultural wells. And that big, the dark line in the middle, that's the median. So that's exactly half of the wells sit right at that concentration. And then it's divided into quartiles. So the bottom 25% of the data is in that lower dashed line. The next quartile is right here. This is the median. This is the 75% quartile, and this is the last quartile. So in terms of the spread, you can see the spread is in Maury County is less than, it's probably about 0.05-ish all the way up to, I think that's 200. That's what I think that's the 200 for Maury County.
Please, folks, in the back. We're going to have a set discussion building the hallway. Thank you.
So, this this is the MCL here. So I didn't show this because this is really, these are the maximum concentrations, right? And so when you look at the table, for example, I showed you on the slide, and you see that the mean concentration for Monterey, this diamond here, is 14 milligrams per liter. That's the mean concentration for another wells, but it's like 1,400 wells. So that's a pretty high. It's almost 1.5 times the drinking water standard is the average concentration of all the agricultural wells, and even higher for that, the drinking water wells in Monterey County. And then, you know, in Santa Barbara County, for the agricultural wells, we have some are 870 milligrams per liter and 600 milligrams per liter nitrate as nitrogen.
And this is a logarithmic scale, right? So it goes from 1 to 10, and then 10 to 100. No, it's not logarithmic.
It is?
Yeah. Okay.
Right, so this is 870. This is about 100. So also remember that this is our first set of data, right? The first year, and it represents irrigation wells and domestic drinking water wells, and this data doesn't exist for any other irrigated land regulatory program. Yeah.
Are there have you looked at ways to further characterize the data points above the MCL? You know, are there any other locations within county, crop types, irrigation practices, is there anything else you've identified?
So we are, that's what we're doing right now, we are beginning to process the data, and I'm working very closely with Chris's staff and on how they relate to practices and nitrogen loading, for example. We haven't completed that analysis. One thing I can say is that there definitely is a high related correlation with vegetable crops, and especially in Monterey County, with high levels of nitrate in groundwater. However, it doesn't mean it's absent for the other crop types that we would consider lower risk. And I don't know, you might remember, or remember, Young, that when we were doing the ag order, we discussed the possibility of not requiring certain lower risk crops to conduct groundwater monitoring because the possibilities were so low, we thought that they would have nitrate contamination, and that really has not been the case. So if you look at the map of the region, there are areas, for example, in Paso and Cambria and other areas that do have nitrate impacts where we wouldn't have expected them to be. So while we do have our predominance where there are vegetable crops, and certainly in the Salinas Valley, even in some of our lower risk areas, we're seeing nitrate as well. And that's why I think this data is so important that we keep continuing to collect it.
Did I read somewhere in the staff report that for tier 3 growers, they were their water samples were also being looked at for aging factors?
So the Central Coast Groundwater Coalition, in their work plan, proposed to conduct some specialized analyses like age dating, as well as some isotopic analysis that would be instructive regarding what were the sources. So, for example, nitrate from a septic tank is different than nitrate from fertilizers. They did conduct that. That monitoring and those analyses, but did not submit that data to the water board. So we, other than anecdotal information at some meetings, we have not seen that data.
Are we going to?
They have indicated to us that they will not submit that data to the water board.
Thank you.
Dr. Hunter. Mayor Delgado.
Thank you. Angela, following up on the discussion about these numbers, the mean, the max, etc., we heard earlier today that 20 or above was sort of a cutoff of being a serious health risk. And so I know getting the data is the hard part, you know, tweaking it whatever way you want to is a little bit easier, though not without effort and time, etc. But and you're, I'm sure, way ahead of me on where you're going to go with this data, but it would be helpful for me to, in some time in the future, see that a dotted line, just like you have for the 10, at 20. And then we can see how many were above that health risk threshold. And it seems like that would be the place to focus the lowest hanging fruit or the most, the highest priority, find out what's going on in those places to make sure those people aren't drinking 20 or higher. Does that make sense?
So I just also want to clarify that 10 is the health number. I acknowledge what you're saying, but we can't preclude that infants don't exist in a household, for example, and that's why the number's set there. 20 is for sort of the threshold for real chronic effect. That's the actual term, long term, chronic effect for the rest of the population.
Right, but if you got a few hundred that are above 10, it seems sensible that you would address those that were higher above 10 than lower above 10. And since 20 has some relevance to the general population's health, how much trouble would it be to have a line of 20 and have the numbers say that, you know, 133 are 20 or higher? Would that be hard to do or easy to
do? No, we can do that. Yeah, we can certainly do that. I would say, though, that, so remember that we have 4,000 groundwater wells, and we already know that 25% see the drinking water standard of 10, so that's 1,001.
Right.
So
it means less to me what the mean is, and it means less to me what percent are at 10 than what percent are higher, just in the triage look. Thank you very much.
So just maybe this, see this off a moment, but this red box, or the red pie, 26% exceed the MCL, but that really dark one exceeds 30. So, and it was about, I think it was like 12-ish, 10-12%. So, of the wells exceed 30 milligrams, so three times the drinking water standard.
And are those data classes set in GeoTracker?
Drinking water wells, irrigation wells?
No, the number classes, the 25 to, you got like 5 different colors.
You can set them, yeah. So, I'll show you the example. Oh, gosh.
Because I think it might be helpful to set them in ways that we think are relevant to our deliberations.
We can download this data from GeoTracker and create maps in any way that you think might be useful.
So the 0 to 2.49 and the 2.5 to 4.99, those don't have any relevance to what we do, but 0 to 10 and 10 to 20 and 20 and higher, it seems like there might be a way of manipulating those to mean, give us more information that we can assimilate.
Okay, we'll do that in the future.
I don't know what the rest of the board members think. That's just my thought. Thanks for all your work.
Mr. Lopez?
I just had a clarification question about the example you provided about the grower who spoke at the last visit down in Castroville. And you mentioned that they had an opportunity once it was discovered that the nitrates exceeded the drinking water standards to pursue funding opportunities through grants. I had the understanding that it was difficult and challenging to receive public funding through grants for private wells.
It's a really good question. So the only reason why we were able to provide these specific individual domestic wells with interstate drinking water, from, for example, wastewater, was because this board, the regional board, decided to allocate PG&E settlement funds, which are not state bond funds. Yeah, we have special funds that we use for emergency interim drinking water. So there would have been not much available to the grower.
Any other question, Ms. Cervantes?
No.
Okay, thank you. So I...
So I think of the purpose of this purely informational.
That's correct.
I take it we'll be getting more of this coming back as we start to look at how we're going to do the next iteration of the ad board. Correct. This data will be coming back to us then, perhaps at that point, then some of the comments that Mayor Delgado expressed could be taken into consideration. And I'd like to see any other ways of analyzing this information so we can learn more about what's causing the higher levels. If it correlates to anything, everything above the 10, you know, let's analyze the hell out of it and see what they correlate, if anything.
And my input, and this is, I think, a little bit of a consensus that I'm gathering, so that as we've been doing at our meetings, we don't end up action steps because of individual directions. But I think we need to, I do totally agree with Mayor Delgado and Mr. Young, that I consider these work in progress, charts and graphs. You know, myself, I, a couple of times I had to dig a little deeper to make an interpretation, so that I would encourage to see how visually we can take these large amount of data and maybe slice and dice them in different ways to make them visually a little bit more understandable. And then likewise, which is the beauty of the way we have the data inputted now, is to segregate it in maps, so it's not one big blob of, you know, different dots. So consider it work in progress, but definitely that will help, I think, all of us and also, you know, stakeholders and members of the public to see where, you know, where we actually see these data, you know, in terms of their various critical levels, as you point out, you know, the thresholds of 10, etc. We do have 4 speaker cards. Would you mind terribly, maybe one of you operating the timer, because Tammy is doing some other coordination.
Try it.
Chair, well, he's getting that set up. I'll make a very brief comment.
Oh, yes.
We talked about over 10 being helpful to see correlations, but I think under 10 milligrams per liter, correlation would be very helpful also. Thank you.
You're welcome. So, I'll start with a speaker card for Kay Mercer. And then if Mr. Schimmick, you can prepare yourself next. And then we'll do Randy Sharon, and then Claire Wendman after that.
Hello, I'm Kay Mercer, and again, making presentation on behalf of GSA. We appreciate staff's review of the groundwater program and outline of the proposed related specifically to groundwater data being presented. We are concerned that the mean value versus the median value is what's being used as the principal statistics. And as you saw in the whisker chart, the median value is what's 50% above and 50% below. The average is heavily influenced by the outliers. The median value is less influenced by the outliers, and so it's really more representative of what's going on. And what we see on a regular basis is that the median is lower than the 10. And so we would like staff to, at the very least, include both when they are creating tables and charts and discussing the data. So that's a request on our, one of our requests. We are also concerned that staff reports don't highlight all the positive things being done by agriculture. As it relates to groundwater monitoring specifically, it should be noted that the Central Coast Groundwater Coalition received responses from 99% of their members. Staff did talk about the high level of compliance, but you know, from a numerical point of view, it was 99%. And those responses, 80% are providing replacement water, and most of the rest have noted that water isn't consumed, i.e. a domestic well that's a shop or a hydrant that someone could drink from is considered a domestic well, even though it may not be consumed. So you need to keep that in mind. The coalition also continues to help members with basic act waiver tasks, which benefits members and the regional board staff. We think this response rate by coalition members is pretty phenomenal, and we'd hope that this would be shared more in staff reports. As it relates to management practices, the annual compliance forms, they track the implementation of millions of acres. Now, you didn't talk about the annual compliance forms here very much, but the reason we're bringing them up is because you're talking about the results of the groundwater monitoring. The next thing is, what are we going to do about it? And one of the things is has been presented to agriculture but hasn't been presented to you is the millions of acres of management practices that are actually being done. And on November 5th, Chris made a presentation to the Western Plant Health Association Fertilizer Research Education Program and basically talks about, you know, what are the number one, number two practices that are being done. It's very valuable information. And I just want to make sure that you understand this data is being analyzed as well and has not been presented to you. So since I'm finished with my comments, can I finish my comments from previously? Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. So next, Mr. Schoenig, please.
Steve Schoenig, the other project commander and housekeeper. So first of all, I think that this presentation like just highlights the usefulness of this data and the importance of this data, and one of the things that we were working very hard to get into the award was exactly this kind of information. So, I mean, it's great. It's truly great. I think that the only thing that really I want to say are two things. One is, I hope that we get a little bit of an independent evaluation on the number, because let's face it, the guy was an engineer, he wasn't a health professional as I understand it, and with all respect to the engineers in the room, I think that we need to get some sort of, from a health professional, whether or not 20 is the critical level or something like that, right? And then finally, I'm concerned about those wells that were untested, especially if they're drinking water wells. And especially if we can eyeball it and say, wow, here's a drinking water well that's untested, that is in an area where we know the levels are sky high. You know, shouldn't we be doing something about that if we can, more quickly than following the normal set of chain of, you know, increased enforcement? Should we be figuring out some way to alert, whether it be county health or the Office of Enforcement or somebody, to say, hey, look, we now have information that we have somebody that's non-compliant, that has a drinking water well in an area that we know is hot. Can we do something to help those people? Thank you.
I just have a comment about that. Mr. Schoenig, I think I heard you say that because someone has an elevated level of nitrate in their well water, that they're not in compliance.
No, that's not what I said.
Okay.
I was talking about those, I think it was 120 or 130, yeah, that low number of people that have failed to test their water. And we know that, but we know it's probably a drinking water well, and we know that it's in a hotspot. Can't we do something?
Mr. Brandy Scherer.
Good afternoon, Randy Scherer. I'm on the board of the Central Grove Camp Groundwater Coalition, a group of 151 members, comprising about 206,000 acres, 4,100 up north, 65,000 down south. We've gone over a lot of the numbers we had that we tested, almost 1,200 wells, 760 domestic, 35 showed nitrate standards over drinking water levels. What we have done, our membership has done, 49% have supplied bottled water, 31% are supplying the reverse osmosis system. As Kay Mercer mentioned, some of the other ones are non-consumable water sources. Our next round of water testing is in April and October of this year. We did a great deal of groundwater characterization. We submitted everything up to GeoTracker here this week, as Angela mentioned. Data supplied by the groundwater contour maps distributed to our memberships in February, primarily data made available to members in 2015. As was mentioned today in the staff report, there are over 380 NOVs were sent out to 519 individual owners and operators in the individual monitoring program who have not performed, as Mr. Schimmick just said. 128 need to be followed up by staff on the testing sample. This is compared to what the near 99.9% of the groundwater monitoring testing that the CGC membership has completed. Coalition continues to assist members as they change branches and update their ENOIs. That's really important. One of the most current ways we can lower inputs, not only nitrogen, but all other inputs, is by improving ground rotation. And guys are doing that a lot more. Not everybody grows every crop, so they're sharing with neighbors. As a coalition, we, you know, try and keep everything up, and it's tough for some guys to keep up to date on GeoTrack, so it's current and present. The coalition helps that. Coalition staff has been responsive to questions from the staff board and clarifying issues with members. CCGC staff will looking forward to working with the regional board staff with the existing and continuing monitoring and reporting program. Beginning this month, CCGC will do its first outreach on irrigation and nitrate management practices with speakers from the UC Cooperative Extension, and CCGC staff and board directors are expected to work closely in the involvement of future development in the next year of work. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I just wanted to say thank you to Randy and the other folks for being collaborative and for bringing people into the fold.
Claire?
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Claire Wyman. I'm the president of the Grower Shipper Association of Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo counties. Today, I'd like to address a few specific points in the staff report. First and foremost, I'm very concerned with suggesting that the MRP be changed to require the same sampling requirements under the individual and cooperative programs. I'm referring to the section on well type starting on the bottom of page 8 of the staff report. The proposed changes to the CCGC work plan would fundamentally undermine a major incentive to participate in a cooperative program, both under the current order, but also in the future. A cooperative approach has many benefits to water quality that a fractured individual approach would not yield. We strongly caution against jeopardizing the future of a cooperative approach now or in the future. This change is partly being justified by an inaccurate description of the current nitrate sampling needs for other compliance requirements. The examples listed for the ACF and TNA reporting only apply to certain Tier 2 and Tier 3 farms. Collecting a sample for internal nitrate management, or even to calculate the nitrate loading risk for Tier 2 and Tier 3 farms, does not require the same sampling methods, ELAP and ELAPS lab certification, a full analytical suite, or to be uploaded to GeoTracker. These things and more would all be required for a sample intended to comply with the groundwater monitoring requirement. We further raise the question if requiring specific nitrate lab methods would further limit the number of labs capable of analyzing the sample. And this number is already very limited. We disagree with the characterization of the nitrate sampling requirements and do not see it as a justification to erode a cooperative groundwater monitoring approach. Next, to echo Kay and Randy's comments, I've previously spoken to this, but wanted to reiterate to the board and also to the public that the sampling results are not representative of what's actually being ingested in many cases. For example, the MRP requires that the sample be collected prior to any treatment, which would not reflect RO treatments. Furthermore, almost any spigot in or near a building, such as a shop faucet or outdoor hose bib, is considered a domestic drinking well by the program. This determination is not representative of the water that is actually being used for drinking and should not be used synonymously. I also understand that extensive information was collected regarding how any exceedances are being addressed. This information was certainly collected through the cooperative, and I understand it was also collected for individual monitoring results. Examples include RO, bottled water, and others. It would have been tremendously helpful to provide the information regarding response to any exceedance in domestic wells to the board and the public to better inform the discussion and risk assessment. Thank you.
It's very persistent. Sorry about that.
Why not sound?
Yeah.
It's, and you feel it feels bad from your end? It's right at me, so yeah. It's important. Thank you very much for your comment. And I also, you know, agree, you know, certainly want to thank all of you for coming and, you know, sharing your concerns today. And I believe Dr. Hunter had an additional question, and then Mayor Delgado.
I just had a comment to make. And this just comes to me as I'm hearing from you, and I'm so pleased to see Mr. Scher. I haven't met you personally, but I see George Adam, and I haven't had a chance to speak with George, and truly appreciate a direct kind of line of communication, as well as seeing you in the room today. Very important. But I think what I find most important to share with you is that since the order was put into place, we have made it a point to have at every hearing the update from the staff on various dimensions of the irrigated ag waiver is a priority for us, and it is an open forum, and it is the opportunity as we move our meetings from southern to northern end of the region, and we do hear from individuals, growers and operators. And also you have this great team of Claire and Abby Taylor Silva, who couldn't be here today, and Kay Mercer, who are also regularly part of that discussion, and I'm hoping that they are conveying, and I know they are, because we talk, that we're getting updates, and we are definitely seeing and hearing about what the growers are doing and the achievements in changing practices and exploring and looking at irrigation and just efficiencies, and then hoping to define where the challenges and the cost factors, you know, those things are going to develop and become more comprehensible to all of us as we are looking at the data and we're hearing from you all on what makes sense and your practical approach to meeting and coming into compliance. You have a range of options, and we're hearing about those options. So I hope that we have conveyed from this board that we are completely open to this dialogue, and I appreciate Kate's in particular wanting to see different constituents or different perspectives gain in a collective dialogue. Those are things that we hope to foster and will continue. So your input today, we will continue to ask staff to bring more definition to the dimensions you have helped us to understand, and we will continue to hold these updates at every single hearing. So I look forward to hearing again from the FARM community directly. Thank you.
Mayor Delgado? Yes, I was interested in the comments by Claire, and it doesn't have to be today, but I'd like to hear staff's response either today or at a future meeting regarding Claire's suggestions on not wanting any change as is being considered by staff regarding the frequency of sampling and also the additional inclusion of irrigation wells as a requirement, which currently doesn't exist for the cooperative group. And I understood in the staff report, and Claire referenced this, that the point of the staff considering requiring irrigation wells to be sampled is so that the growers would know how much nutrient, how much nitrate, for example, was in their water, so they could include that in their nutrient budgeting. And so maybe Claire and growers think that the variability of nutrient levels in the water is so high that they don't want to consider that in their budgeting. They don't want to reduce their fertilizer application because there's nitrogen in the water because of the variabilities in the water quality and the amount of nitrate. So anyway, that issue of staff considerations for changes and Claire and others' resistance to those changes, I thought would be worth more discussion either today or in the future when staff is ready.
Yeah, I think that's something that we'll be talking about in the future as we begin discussing what the next ag order will look like.
So when staff report says that there are these considerations, they're meaning for the next ag waiver? Ag order?
So just to clarify, the intent of those elements from staff report was really just to demonstrate areas where we're considering right now lessons learned from implementation, sort of potential areas for improvement. And with respect to irrigation wells, it is a data gap that we have currently.
So is it implicit that that's for the next ag order that you're considering it?
I would say it's our intent is it being considered for the future for a potential change.
Okay. Yeah, as a reminder, this is an informational discussion, and trying to read the tea leaves, I don't think, is the purpose of today. You know, there are certainly many areas that, you know, there are benefits derived from the information we're gathering, and so right now I think it's a matter of, you know, digesting the information that is in front of us. Anything else you'd like to add?
What are you looking at?
Well, I don't want to sidestep it too much because the staff report discloses these considerations, and I was just seeking some clarification about what that language means that there are considerations undergoing here.
Yeah, I would say that that language was staff's thought of things to think about in the future when we're discussing potential changes, but I would not say that that is something that we're discussing today.
I need some clarity. You talk about future and changes. Are you talking about the current ag order? And doesn't the EO have some flexibility, discretion?
So, yes.
Some changes during current
yes.
ad board? Okay.
Yes, the EO does.
Okay, so does staff have any plans to change the monitoring requirements?
No. There's not been a determination that these lessons learned concepts that are in the staff report are necessarily going to be proposed for an executive officer change or as changes when the new egg order is approved. But they are the same considerations. So in other words, what we have to evaluate is what regulatory tool or authority might these be brought forward or when. Just simply that these are outcomes, staff's ideas, and also in conjunction with talking with stakeholders from CCGC about some ideas that could come forward in one of those ways in the future once we figure out where we're going next. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Thank you. So this closes the item 19.